Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the CIG Insider NJ podcast, brought to you by Capital Impact Group and Insider NJ. My guest today is Assemblyman Kevin Rooney, Republican from the 40th Legislative District, which includes portions of Bergen, Essex, Morris, and Passaic counties. Assemblyman Rooney has served in the legislature since 2016, and prior to that has worn many different hats in his lifetime. An experienced arboriculturist, salesman, and business owner, a reality show-winning home chef, and, as he was known on national news during a freak snowstorm, the mayor who canceled Halloween, the Assemblyman most of all should be recognized as someone who is absolutely devoted to serving his community. His first break in public service came as a member of his local zoning board at the behest of his father-in-law, who clearly saw potential in the young man who, at the time, was running a tree management company. During our conversation, the Assemblyman tells me about how his experiences as a committeeman and mayor of Wyckoff Township helped him to realize his passion for public service, which he continues to foster in the state legislature. He also talks about his bipartisan advocacy for environmental issues that garnered international attention, and his interest in raising greater awareness for the New Jersey state animal. Finally, we talk about his time on the hit TV cooking competition Chopped, and how his love for cooking also allows him to serve those who are less fortunate. So, here today with Assemblyman Kevin Rooney. Thank you very much for joining me today.
It's really my pleasure.
Yeah. So, you've been in the Assembly now. Will this be almost finishing up your first full term?
Well, I actually went in December of 2016.
Right.
So I had the following.
Seat.
Correct.
Right.
So it's coming up on the end of 3 years. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what have you learned in those 3 years as a member of the Assembly, especially in the minority party?
Well, Trenton's not, you know, not the same as local politics.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll go back a little history of my past experience.
Sure.
As an elected official. So I was fortunate to marry into a family where politics was essential, and it was the forefront of a discussion just about every night. My father-in-law was at one point the mayor of our local town. I served on the council as a committeeman, then mayor twice, went on to be the state committeeman, and eventually the Republican chairman of Bergen County. So he came home one night. I was working in three different states, doing about 80 to 90 hours a week. And he said, I need you to do me a favor. And I said, what's that, you know? He said, I want you to go on the local zoning board as an alternate. Now, at that point, I didn't even know what the zoning board was. I was working, trying to make a living.
What were you doing at the time?
So I was running tree companies.
Okay.
And we'll go back to my career in that
sure.
in a minute. But so he had asked me to go on as an alternate. So, okay, as the, you know, as the noble son-in-law, I said yes. And I went to town hall, and I was sworn in as a full member. Not an alternate.
Mm-hmm.
Came home that night and said, what'd you do? He started laughing. He knew exactly what he was doing. I spent 11 years on the zoning board. And that's where you really learn how to say no. You can't always say yes. And when you're saying no to your neighbors and friends, it becomes difficult. But you learn that you need to do the right thing. And it's not always about a yes. It's about a compromise.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I learned during that process and ultimately became the chairman that compromise is the way to get the end product and make both parties happy. So I spent about 11 years on the zoning board. Then I was asked to run for council. And my first shot at running for council is with my current running mate in the Assembly, Krista Phillips. We learned how to really walk the town and find out that the town that you pictured was not really the town that you're living in. You start to see hardship. Even in an affluent town, you see the hardship. You see the seniors that have newspapers, curtains. And you would never expect that in the town. And we found that there was needs that we didn't know about. So I ran with Chris, and we were very successful. That was in 2009. 2010, I became the deputy mayor. In 11, I was the mayor. I was subsequently the mayor again in 2015 and 16. As I said, I left in 16 at the end of, almost the end of my term as mayor, to go into the Assembly. And I've had fun ever since. As I said, it's a lot easier to effectuate change at a local level than when you're in the minority down in Trenton. But learning how to compromise has worked well because you're able to reach across the aisle.
Right.
You know,
right.
We don't see the same kind of politics and the rhetoric that you have in D.C. We can disagree on policy, but at the end of the day, it's just about policy. It's not a hatred towards another party. You know, these are friends. We just happen to disagree and sometimes on policy.
Mm-hmm.
So you asked me what I was doing before that. So when I was in college, just like any other college student, you need to make money to pay for your expenses in your college. So held down multiple jobs, and in everything from flipping burgers at Great Adventure in the summer to work in the lifeguard position down at Bradshaw Beach in Point Pleasant. And then one summer there was a little insect called the gypsy moth that was out there devastating, New Jersey's trees. Didn't know much about it, but I was hired onto a local tree care company to drag a spray hose that summer. And I found that I was making a lot of money doing that. Working 10, 15 hours a day, we're spraying trees in the night for municipalities. Back then it was a different kind of climate. And I decided I liked that. I was going to school for business. My father was an attorney. My mother was a nurse. The career path could have been, either in the medical field or in the legal field. But I saw an instant gratification of making money in something that really benefited everyone, the environment. So I worked my way up, got my hands dirty, after college, from, as I said, spraying trees to being the foreman on the truck, driving the truck, mm-hmm. and selling off the truck, to learning how to climb trees. So a grounds person to climbing, to a foreman, to a salesman. And I always wanted more. And so when I got to the point where I wasn't being challenged enough in sales, I left that company to go work for another company that had one office at the time, and I helped them grow their business throughout this part of the United States. Mm-hmm. And then when I was challenged again, I left and went for a company out of Westchester County where we had one office at the time. Helped build that company, a family-owned business, from one office to five, and from one state to three.
Wow.
And the irony is I came back and bought the company that I once worked for.
That's great.
And my former employers became my employees. So it was a different dynamic back then. But I had a lot of fun growing mm-hmm. companies that were, doing a couple $100,000 to tens of millions.
So the job that you really liked, you enjoyed it.
I did. I did it for 33 years.
Something completely different.
33 years in arboriculture.
Yeah.
I still hold New Jersey Certified Tree Expert title. So I also spent time on my local town, Shade mm-hmm. Tree, mm-hmm. Helped them become a Tree City USA, recognition for that, helped with their different goals in sustainable New Jersey. Because of that background. So I know what it's like to work.
Yeah. Doing a summer job.
Yeah. And I started in a summer job and, had a talent for sales. Mm-hmm. So when I went into sales, it was the natural progression to actually have more salespeople. At one point, I had 26 salespeople working for me mm-hmm. in that company. We had about 250 employees.
Wow.
So a very, very large national firm. Enjoyed that tremendously. Would probably still be doing that. Until, as I said, I had a father-in-law mm-hmm. who brought me into the political arena, but then unfortunately came down with cancer in 2000. Beat the cancer, we thought, for about 2 years, and then it came back very aggressive, and he passed away in 2004, January 2004. At that point, I was still working those crazy hours. I had one of my own companies. I had multiple companies at that point. Everything from tree care to landscaping to hardscaping, real estate, a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. And we had a family situation that required more of my time, and my mother-in-law asked me to come and help be part of the family business. And we did a spinoff, and my brother-in-law and I, we run our part of the family business, which is real estate holding.
Okay.
So we have everything from your gas station to a single family dwelling, to an apartment building, to retail space, to farmland, mm-hmm. Everything in between. Anything you think of, that's what we manage.
All within this area?
No, we expand out of this local area, yes. So, yes, some requires a plane flight.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Terrific.
So that's the day job. But what it does do, it allows me the opportunity to spend more time doing this job.
Right.
Because you're not doing this for the money. You're doing this because you have a passion to give back to people, mm-hmm. And that really should be the goal. I consider myself an elected official, not a politician. I'm here to represent the people, and it's not just the 225,000 people that live in this district. When I make when I put my vote up on the board, it's for 9 million folks, and that's the way I look at mm-hmm. it. WHIP benefits the greater majority,
right?
And I vote more with my heart and my head than anything else. It's not about one single group. You have to represent everyone equally.
Well, your father-in-law must have saw something in you at the time to put you on the zoning board. He must have saw some kind of, fire within you that called for public service.
Yeah, I think he did. You know, and he came from a family that gave back so much, whether it was, and they were very well-established businessmen. They have the, you know, my father-in-law's father and brother, so it'd be his great-uncle, my wife's great-uncle, really have the story of how immigrants came over to this country and made their mark. And I'll back up a little bit about that. That's kind of what he saw, I guess, is that entrepreneur spirit. So my wife's grandfather and her great uncle came over from Holland in the early 20s with just a few pennies between the two of them. But they knew that service was the most important way to build their company. And their company at that point was nothing. But they decided to work in open gas stations. And they would just out-service everybody else. So instead of just being there, you know, a 9-to-5 job, they worked to dawn to dusk and then into the wee hours of the night, really creating that spirit and that service business. And they built it to one point, they were Mobil's oldest and largest distributor in North America.
Wow.
So from two old Dutchmen that came over in their early 20s with no money, they became very well respected. And because of that respect and that work ethic, my father-in-law would do a lot. You know, he was very involved with the Boy Scouts. As I said, he was very involved with the Republican Party, but more importantly, very involved in a civic manner. My mother-in-law volunteered for the Ambulance Corps. My wife still volunteers for the Ambulance Corps in Wyckoff as the captain.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's been involved just giving back to the public in their own special way. And it's everything from endowments that we've set up for inner city women to really get a leg up in life. They just don't necessarily have the ability to get there without a little bit of help. It's all about giving back in our world. And I think that's what, you know, you need to do. You need to leave your mark on this planet, you know, to do whatever you can to help people.
Was the legislature something that you saw in your mind as a goal, or was it something that, you know, you sort of fell into as a longtime township committeeman and you're active in the community? You see it in the future? Or?
Yeah, higher office is always something that I've strived to do. And I would say that this is not the end.
Okay.
So, yes, the opportunity presented itself. I was fortunate that I've had a very good relationship with the legislators in this district for quite some time. So back when Kevin O'Toole, Senator O'Toole, now Port Authority Chairman Kevin O'Toole, was thinking about making a move and retiring, he had put his 20-plus years into the legislature, he approached Krista Phillips and myself, said, look, we're considering Kristen Corrado for Senate. We'd like to consider you two guys for the assembly positions. Scott Romana, Assemblyman Romana, is going to move over. He's taking a judge position.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dave Russo is looking to retire out of the legislature. Would you consider it? How do you say no?
Right.
It's an opportunity that comes around only once in a lifetime. As I said, I've always looked to go higher in office, and it made sense to consider that. Now, that created a very bumpy ride for me to get in 2016. I'm sure you want to talk about that a little
bit. Sure, there was some tension with the county organization and selecting candidates for that seat.
Right, so it was very interesting. So in 2016, when the announcement was made that I was going to seek the open seat for Scott Romana's position, obviously, I had O'Toole and that group behind us, Al Barless, chairman of Essex County, and we had other county chairs involved at that point. But there were some rocky roads going on in Bergen County with that chairmanship position. Morris County was a little weak at that point also, and of course, now we needed to start to look how we're going to move forward. So it was a contested primary for that open seat. I was successful in achieving that title, but that wasn't the end.
Right.
So is the interesting thing is I had just run for council, so I had an election. There was a discussion that I should run for the Bergen County chairman position, so I just had put my foot in the water a little bit, maybe more than a toe, so about a foot, you know, I was out there. And I had to back away from that position, so I was running two campaigns and then jumped into the campaign for the open seat. As I said, was successful and sworn in December. Then we come to January, when Kristen's going to announce the position. Chris and myself are formally announcing for, you know, running for District 40. And at that point, we had many, many mayors, freeholders, council folks, and chairman endorsing us. So we had the Morris County chairman endorsement. We had Passaic County chairman's endorsement. and we had the Bergen County chairman's endorsement. We did not have at that point the one open position. So with that being said, we moved to a position and started to put our name out there. Enter Paul D. Gaetano, former assemblyman, former assembly speaker on our side, minority leader, so on and so forth, decided he would run for Bergen County chairman. And I'd asked Paul at the time, are you seeking this position to help the party or for self-interest? And there was no answer. We all come to find out, you know, the reality was he was seeking it for his own benefit. So he put together a slate to run against us. Former Senator Norm Robinson, former Senator's son Joe Bubba for the two assembly seats, and of course Paul for the Senate seat. Our team was very successful in doing two things, getting our message out and raising a significant amount of money in order to get that message out. Our team works tirelessly, not only for the residents, but when we're out campaigning, we're everywhere and anywhere. So we beat that ticket by a 2-1 margin, very large margin.
Yeah, impressive victory.
And very successful because, again, we wanted it bad. Mm-hmm. We wanted to represent this district. We wanted to live up to the legislators that had been here before, their legacy. You know, there's no one better as a senator that represented this than Kevin O'Toole.
Right.
Yeah. Even though former Senator McNamara is a very dear friend and his wife Joan, Kevin has been instrumental in achieving a lot of good things for not only this district but the state of New Jersey, and now is a position with the Port Authority. So we got through the primary in a very successful fashion, and then we took on our challengers on the other side of the aisle, and we were very successful there too. Even in a year when voter turnout was anti-Christie.
Right.
As a Republican, there's a little bit of a hiccup there. They're a little bit of anti-Trump.
Right.
But we were successful in getting the message out that, you know, we were the ticket. What we did hear from, you know, the mayor's council folks, both Democrats and Republicans in this district, is that they never saw legislators as responsive and as present as we. You know, we're there all the time. Anything they need, and it doesn't matter about party affiliation. We're there for you to help you in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
Whether it's a snowstorm, a flood, a concerned citizen, pothole repair, you know, whatever it may be, we're there for you. And I think that's the intent and the intention of every good legislator should be there for, you know, your residents, your mayors, your elected officials. You know, when there's a storm approaching, the first thing they're getting is phone calls and tweets from us and texts saying, look, how can we help? We're there. Here's our numbers. Whatever you need, let us know. Our office is available. Our chief of staff is sending out emails just so that they know that we're there for them.
Well, as a former mayor, I'm sure you kind of took that experience and applied it to your job in the legislature.
Absolutely. And going back even from the storm damage, you know, when I was in the tree business, you know, you know, you were gone for 3, 4, 5 days at a clip because there was an urgency to help people, right? Get trees off their houses, cars, open, you know, entrances. And that just translates into a new way of approaching things, and it's being there for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, back when I was mayor, we had the famous October snowstorm in 2011, where I was the mayor on the news that canceled Halloween.
Oh, you know, I remember that.
Fox 5 was there. All CNN, every news station was out there saying, you know, this mayor in New Jersey is canceling Halloween.
Right.
Well, what they didn't realize, I had power lines down, snow. It was a very hazardous situation. And at the same time I'm doing an interview with Fox, there's a bear walking through our town, and the helicopter's flying over. And I said, you know, this is a real, you know, problem in our community right now. You know, people can die by stepping on a live wire. You know, we go forward, we had Hurricane Sandy. At that point, Chris was the mayor in town. But, you know, we had, as a family, we had the only operational gas station in the town. Where I was able to secure fuel from the state and out of state to supply first responders, first and foremost, so they could get to the job, nurses, doctors, Homeland Security, Secret Service, and more importantly, people to keep their generators up and running and keep them alive. We had people on dialysis, oxygen, and they needed that special service. You know, it was a situation where we were open, pumping, bent over, pumping, you know, 1 and 2 gallon containers to get people up and running. It wasn't about someone who wanted to go to, you know, the mall to go shopping.
Yep.
It was about saving people's lives.
Yep.
And we did that for over 12 days because our town was out of power, most of the town, for 3 weeks. But it wasn't just Wyckoff residents, and that was one of the things that was important to us. We were helping people throughout the state, this northern part of the state that were out of power. They came to us seeking help, and that's what it's about, helping your neighbor. And I think that's the underlying job responsibility we have here, is to help our neighbor. You know, we're all taxpayers in this state. We're all looking for a future. You know, I want to be able to afford the same opportunities to my kids and grandchildren that my grandparents afforded the opportunity to my parents.
Right.
And so I'm someone that was born in Patterson, as was my wife, at St. Joe's. I come from an Irish-Italian background. My father obviously was Irish with the last name Rooney. My grandmother was a school teacher in Patterson for 40 years on Madison Avenue, right by Market Street. And back then, the environment was, you know, you could walk as a little kid to the Wonder Bread factory. You know, a lot of people don't even know that existed back then. You know, my mother came from Passaic on Martha Place. And I remember these things because I was there so much, where I could play marbles on the curb, you know. And the world has changed since then. But what they did, those hardworking immigrants that came over, they afforded my parents the opportunity to be successful. As I said, my father was an attorney, put himself through law school. In school, my mother was a nurse. She did the same. They were able to, once married, move first to Fairlawn, New Jersey, and then up to a country town called Upper Saddle River, which is no longer country, but when I grew up there, it had dirt roads.
Is that right?
Yeah, it had dirt roads. And my mom worked in hospitals, and then she ultimately became a school nurse in the community, in Bogart and Reynolds School in Upper Saddle River. I went through the school system there. But they gave us the opportunity to do what we're doing now. You know, I have four children. I have three daughters and a son. I have two grandchildren, two son-in-laws, and one more grandson that we had a reveal party a couple weeks ago coming in September.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But the problem is, you know, my two oldest daughters are twins. The one daughter's husband has a business. And they were able to purchase a house in town. Her sister, her twin sister, and her husband has a good job. They live with us, with my two grandchildren, because we're allowing them the time needed to save enough money to buy their first house. Mm-hmm. My son lives with us. They're all college educated. My two oldest went to Lynchburg and Randolph. My son went to our son. My wife will object to that. Loyola in New Orleans, and our youngest daughter, graduated Drew University. She lives with us also. So we have four adults living with us, besides my wife and myself, and two grandchildren. Because in this state, they don't have the same opportunities that we had, and we need to change that.
Right, right.
You know, yeah. We need to protect our seniors, you know, the middle class, obviously, but more importantly, the millennials getting out of college.
Yeah.
They need to be able to raise their families, if that's what they choose to, in this state.
Yeah, they say that this is the first generation that won't, I guess, outperform their parents' generation. Certainly with student loans, cost of living is extremely important issues, and it just doesn't seem to be getting any better as of right now.
It's not getting any better.
Yeah.
You know, we were at a graduation ceremony. I was the keynote speaker at a private school on Friday, and there was around 44 kids that had graduated from that college. And one of the things that was very interesting, and it represents a very diverse group that goes to this school, I think it's 14% is non-US and 86% is from the United States. But these kids have achieved their, in the state, one of the best SAT scores, number one. Number two, they have the highest SAT scores in Passaic County. The real caveat is they received over $7 million worth of scholarships.
Wow.
And the valedictorian spoke about New Jersey, you know, not in the best way.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's not a place where he wants to live. But the interesting thing is all of them recognize the need for good education. And I would say approximately 80% are staying in New Jersey to go to college. which is great,
yeah.
and which is a turnaround from the norm.
Yeah.
You know, there's normally a lot of out-migration with just education.
Right.
These students have decided to go to your Rutgers, your Ramapos.
That's a testament to their quality.
It is, yeah. Stevens, yeah. you know. So it was nice to hear that,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I'm hoping that it turns around a little bit. But I hope that that experience they have in the New Jersey colleges opens their eyes to the possibilities of continuing to live here.
Right.
You know, that's what my hope is, because we really need to keep that type of spirit in young minds in our state.
Absolutely. So you went from a committeeman, a mayor, you were a small business owner, very active in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're in the legislature, in the minority party. Obviously, it's a different kind of circumstance, different experience. Is there anything that's you find frustrating to be in that position? Obviously, you have very strong ideas and principles and thoughts about how, you know, things should be done in the state, and there's not a lot of room to get some of those things done right now.
Right. Well, there's a couple of things that I can answer for you there. One of the frustrating things is the fact that it's hard to get meaningful legislation before a committee.
Right.
You know, we've, as a caucus, have put up hundreds of pieces of legislation that would improve the quality of life for our New Jersey residents, both from a tax perspective and just the way they go about their daily activities. So that's one of the tough things. You know, being in the minority, if we have a good idea and a good bill, sometimes those bills become someone else's bills.
Right.
And
they magically have someone else's name on them.
They do.
Right.
They do. And sometimes in order for you to continue down that pathway, you know, you take a second position as opposed to the prime position that you once had.
Because you know it's a good piece of legislation.
You do.
Yeah.
And again, it's at the end of the day, it's about really representing and helping the people of New Jersey. The interesting thing right now, as I said, you know, we can disagree on policy, but I have a lot of good friends on the other side of the aisle. I don't know if the current administration is working as well with the other side of the aisle as well as they could be, you know. And that's unfortunate for the state of New Jersey and its residents, because we're facing some very, very tough times, and it requires some very, very hard decisions to be made. Like I said, you know, I had to tell residents, my neighbors and friends, sometimes when they wanted to build an addition, they couldn't do what they wanted. But let's do this. And that's why I said that art of compromise came into play. I don't see that happening right now. And that's the frustrating thing. You know, if you recall back when we had the budget shutdown back in 2017 under Governor Christie, it wasn't a Republican issue. It was a fight amongst my colleagues on the other side of the aisle where, you know, in my house, it was a deadlock between 26 and 26. Where, you know, we sat with 26 that had a position that were willing to sit down and move the budget along, and 26 wouldn't show up. And that was a problem, because at the end of the day, who loses? You know, we closed beaches.
Right.
People didn't have the opportunity on a beautiful weekend to really go out and embrace New Jersey's culture and all the different things that New Jersey has to offer, in this case, the Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
So that was unfortunate, and that was infighting. You know, I'm hoping that the infighting doesn't lead to another government shutdown. Because at the end of the day, it's the residents that lose, you know. So those are some of the struggles that you have when you're the minority party. But the benefit of being here is the fact that you can really, truly make a difference back in your district. There are so many things that we do at a local level helping people that you know, they need someone to cut through the red tape. You know, government is just overburdened with red tape. In some cases, incompetence, right? The lack of ability to get things done in a proactive way. You don't see that at the local level, because in a small town, you got your finger on everything, right? You can touch everyone in a quick way and get it done. In Trenton, there's just levels of bureaucracy that it's difficult to get done. So, you know, and a prime example, you know, is what we're doing right now with the marijuana legislation, right? Whether you're for it or against it doesn't really matter. The discussion is it's what it's doing to the state and the division that you're seeing out there right now, which if you follow politics, you know, we're going to have some problems towards the end of June getting this budget passed. And that's just one of the pitfalls of infighting.
Right.
It really is.
Right. So along those same lines, and you talked a little bit about how, you know, it's different on the federal level than it is on the state level, just in terms of bipartisan cooperation, things like that. And you're obviously very active in Republican politics, and you have been for a long time. How do you see, or how do you chart the future of the Republican Party in New Jersey right now? Democrats have the governor's office, the majority in the legislature. What do you see in the future for the party?
Well, it's been a rare occurrence for the Democratic Party, the governorship, to have two successful terms in a row, right?
I think Brendan Byrne was the last governor. Yeah.
So I'm hopeful that that changes. Listen, one party rule is never good, and whether it's it would be the Senate and the Assembly run by Republicans and a Democrat in the governor or vice versa, there needs to be some type of balance. And right now we don't have balance. And without balance, you start to see this infighting that we're experiencing here.
Right.
But I think, you know, going back to finding common ground and issues that everybody can embrace, you can get people on both sides of the aisle energized and desirous for change. And I'll give you an example. Back in 2017, I sat in on a joint legislative hearing in Sea Caucus over what was happening in the Passaic River and the cleanup that was required there, mm-hmm. right? There was a lot of pollution that took place by firms, some that are no longer in existence, that contaminated that body of water. And what came out of that was an understanding on my part that we needed to do something quickly. And we needed to hold accountable the firms that were responsible for this cleanup. It's not in my district. But what it's doing is contaminating not only the water in New Jersey, but they had dioxin, a specific type of dioxin, found as far south as Florida in fish.
Wow.
They talked about eating, if someone wants to eat one blue claw crab from the state of New Jersey, and that contaminated water has enough carcinogens to kill you.
Wow.
So these were things that were alarming.
Yeah.
So we had a follow-up meeting with my staff over that, and we came up with an idea to do a little bit more research, and we found that the country of Argentina was responsible by having a company that they owned default on their specific obligation. And we can go into the details, but it's very lengthy. But make a long story short, but the state of New Jersey was investing funds in the pension in this Argentina company, right? So I was able to get, in a 48-hour period of time, 63 legislators, the speaker, the president, both sides of the aisle, to sign on to a letter that was hand-delivered to President Macri in Argentina by Vice President Pence.
Wow.
Because they were having a summit down there. They actually wanted me to go down there for this. So the bill has passed now twice in both houses.
Right.
It was vetoed originally by Christie on his way out, and it was CV'd by this governor. I don't think the fight's over on it. My counterpart on the Senate side, Senator Beach, I know wants to see this bill come back up and be presented in the way that it was crafted
right.
by this office, because we can't invest and allow investments in foreign companies when they're shirking their obligations here in the state of New Jersey. And at the end of the day, our residents are on the hold for the cleanup, but more importantly, their health.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
We can't be known as the polluter that has allowed countries and companies to get off the hook, contaminate our waters, affect our children and our residents, but more importantly now affect other people in other states. It's just unacceptable. There's more we can do.
Yep.
And by no means am I an environmentalist, but I'm a concerned resident, I'm a concerned father, and more importantly, that's my job.
Right, right.
You know, it's my job to protect, you know, the residents here in New Jersey.
Yeah, that's terrific. And you got to see the kind of impact that you can make as a state legislator.
Absolutely.
On a global scale.
Absolutely. And listen, you know, when I put up bills, I don't necessarily always have one lane.
Right.
You know, which goes against my chief of staff sometimes. He'd like to have me follow one lane. But there's so many issues that come up. As I said, I was just speaking before you came in to another radio station with respect to a bill that I have. And has bipartisan support both on the Senate side and the Assembly side. And essentially is, you know, you're sitting here in my office and you see the big state seal, right? And what sits atop of that seal?
A horse.
A horse, right.
The horse's head.
The horse's head. And that is the state animal in New Jersey, right? Mm-hmm. But you can't find a license plate that commemorates that horse.
That's true.
But you can find other license plates out there, everything from Save Our Trees to, you know, Jersey Shore, so on and so forth.
I had a Jets license plate in my car because I'm a
Jets
fan.
There you go. Well, you should probably have the horse. Right. But, you know, people have a love of horses.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a huge part of the industry in New Jersey.
It certainly is. Yeah. But more importantly, you know, besides being our state animal, we have more horses per capita than any other state in the country.
Oh,
more than Kentucky.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, most people don't. Yeah. We have about 27,000 horses in this state. So, you know, I start thinking, you know, why don't we have that? Now, there's a little bit of a background. We have horses. My wife has been riding horses since she was three.
Okay.
My girls, my three daughters, all rode on their college equestrian teams or were their captains.
Wow.
My wife's William Patterson's equestrian coach. So we have great passion for horses and that beloved animal. But that being said, you know, we should be recognizing the state animal in some way.
Right.
Other than just on top of the seal, what people don't realize, it's the state animal.
Yeah.
You know, we now know who, you know, the state reptile is last year, the bog turtle.
I think there's a state microbe now.
Yeah, microbe. But we're not recognizing, you know, the animal. So, you know, I thought about how can we do that in a way that would make sense. And, you know, I have a bill out there, which has its companion bill, that recognizes not only the state animal with a license plate, but the monies that are generated from that license plate, that people purchasing it, will go for therapeutic riding, for special needs. So these are folks that have autism, you know, different physical handicaps, muscular dystrophy, so on and so forth. And also our wounded warriors, you know, because there's a calming effect to working with a horse, whether you're riding it or brushing it. And we've seen that with wounded warriors, PTSD, for example. Just the brushing of a horse has calmed them down and give them some purpose. So it's, again, not just about recognizing the horse, but there's a benefit. It's to help people.
It's therapeutic.
It's totally to help people.
Yeah.
And how better for us as legislators to help people? And we can help such a great population of people by, again, recognizing, one, the horse, but more importantly, allowing that money to go to its intended purpose per the bill.
And also bring awareness to, like I said, an industry that's been a part of New Jersey for so long. Maybe you would know what the current state of the industry is, the equine industry in New Jersey.
Well, it's actually doing pretty good now.
Is it?
You know, we actually were down at a farm that has harness racing horses two weeks ago with the legislature. Some of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle speaking about the sports betting benefit of it. But interesting enough, you know, what you don't see is it's not just about the people that are riding the horse or the ownership, right? It's the farriers. Those are the people that do the feet on the horse. And, you know, a hoof on a horse is just like your fingernail. It has to get trimmed. And some every 4 weeks, some maybe 6 or 8 weeks, but it has to be trimmed. So there's a business there. There's all the farmers, right, that are growing the hay and the feed for your horses that are employing. The people that are actually bringing that product to and from, right? So it's bringing the feed to a farm and then removing the waste from a farm, for example. There's so many ancillary businesses that are tied to the horse in this state. We need to recognize it and do everything we can.
Yeah,
it's just another industry within the Garden State
that
we need to keep, you know, on the forefront. Listen, we don't want to lose the ranking of the most horses, right, per capita in the entire United States. When you think about, you know, Kentucky, when you think about, you know, the Carolinas, which has a little bit better year-round environment, right,
sure,
in the winters.
Yeah.
We want to be able to, you know, use every opportunity we can, and this is just another opportunity that exists in New Jersey. Why not maintain it and help it, you know? And so that's another reason that, you know, I'm looking to do this piece of legislation.
That's terrific.
You know, so it's one of many.
Yep.
You know, in my short time here, I've introduced a lot of pieces of legislation and had a lot of bills, you know, assigned.
That's great. So before we start to wrap up, there's one other thing I wanted to mention. You may be, to the best of my knowledge, the only member of the legislature who was on a reality show.
Yes.
Is that right?
Well, I may be the only one. Yes.
You were a contestant on Chopped.
I was.
The cooking show. How did you I guess you really enjoy cooking. You must.
So I do. So mayor thing, right?
Uh-huh.
So coming home from a council meeting, it's about 11 o'clock at night, and one of my daughters, Jordan, said, I signed you up for this show, Chopped. And at that point, I didn't even know what it was.
Right.
I didn't have time to watch any TV between working so many hours and then working in the town. I said, great, you know. So didn't think much of it until about a month later when I got a phone call from the producers. And they wanted to go through my application. I said, sure, you know, I'm interested. I could, blah, blah, blah. They said, well, listen, we want you to do a phone interview. So we did the phone interview. Was successful there. Then they wanted to do a Skype interview. So we did a Skype interview. And this process was going on for months at this point.
Right.
Then they asked me to come into New York City and do a live on-camera interview and see how I performed. Now, I'm in front of the camera all the time.
Sure.
You know, in front of the public. Okay, no big deal. So I went into the city and did that. And they liked what they saw. They then weeded it down from about 3,000 people down to a couple hundred. And then ultimately down to just a handful. And they said, look, we want to do the quick intro and see if you can really cook.
Right.
So, you know, if you watch the show, there's a couple second, anywhere from 5 to 10 second intro on the person. So I said, okay, no problem. That'd be great. They said, well, let's do it in Wyckoff. And I said, okay, there's a filming ordinance. They said, what do you mean? I said, well, I just put an ordinance through as mayor because we had a lot of reality shows wanting to film their, you know, Housewives of New Jersey.
Right.
And we put an ordinance in. They said, well, we don't pay fees. I said, well, I don't know what to tell you. They said, well, can't you do something about it? I said, yeah, you got to pay the fee. So we went to another location because they didn't want to pay the fee. And that 10-second interview in the beginning actually took almost 8 hours.
Really?
8 hours.
Wow.
And then during that process, they had me on a Harley motorcycle, which I had a Harley at the time, standing in front of an American flag at a gas station because we couldn't find one. It was February. Everything was frozen.
Right.
And then cooking. You know, so I did the cooking intro, and they liked what they saw. So they invited me to do the show. Got to the city about 5:30 in the morning, but when I was leaving the house, my wife said two things. Be humble and grateful. I said, okay. So keep that in the back of my mind. Went to the show. They brought us across the street. It was five of us. And anybody knows anything about the show, there's only four contestants.
Right.
The fifth person is in case one of us gets hurt, chickens out in the very beginning. Make a long story short, went through, you know, the process of the 20 minutes and the half hour, and I won.
You won the whole show.
I won the whole show. And so I was awarded the $10,000. I took the $10,000 as a whole number, because you pay tax on it.
Right.
But I donated an entire $10,000 to Oasis in Patterson. Oasis in Patterson is a shelter for battered women and children. And we started a culinary arts program there.
Terrific.
It's just a way of getting people a leg up in life. They've earned a certificate to get them into the culinary field. And in some cases, very inspirational letters have been written to me, how they got their children back, got an apartment, and helped them in many ways. For whatever reason, the public likes to be part of that still. And I've been auctioned off so many times for nonprofits to cook and raise money for them.
That's fun. Like cooking classes and things like that?
No, like you want me to come and cook at a dinner party for you.
Oh, okay, like private dinners.
Private. So it's ranged from, you know, as little as 6 people on up to 20
That's
people
funny.
That I've cooked for. And typically what I do is I donate all the food and whatever else, or I'll cook with a you know, a business owner or a chef or something, and we'll side by side do it. And I've raised hundreds of thousands of dollars so far for nonprofits. Everything from the food bank in New Jersey to synagogues, churches, parks departments, schools, you name it, Boys and Girls Clubs, you name it, I've said yes to. And it still amazes me today they keep asking.
Right.
But, you know, there's only so much time in a day.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun.
Yeah.
Listen, it's fun. And
do you remember what you made in the show that put you over the top, that won the competition?
Look, I think it was just, you know, they look at all three, the appetizer, the entree, and the dessert. They look as a totality at the end.
Yeah.
And I think it was the whole presentation. It was, you know, I cooked from the heart, and, you know, as a father of four who was busy, you know, you're, and I think anybody that is a father or a mother is used to taking anything they can out of a refrigerator
right.
at the last minute because
yep.
they just can't go to the food store and create something
Slap
for their
together,
family.
Yeah.
So as long as it tastes good, your kids are going to eat it. So, you know, that's where it came from. But as I said, I'm half Italian, half Irish. The Italian side, you know, my great-grandmother always was cooking in the house. My father on the Irish side cooked in the house all the time.
Yeah.
He wasn't a meat and potatoes guy.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
He was able to cook. So it was just, you know, the way of, you know, the way of doing things came naturally. When I was young, I didn't watch a lot of sports. You know, I was watching Graham Kerr, The Galloping Gourmet at night. I was watching Justin Wilson, you know, those kind of shows after I did my homework kind of thing,
right.
You know. And it just became fun. You know, early on in life, being married, I didn't have time. So my wife was, you know, making the microwaved hot dogs for the kids or whatever. she could create with a box and a can of soup.
Yep.
But then as I had more time to actually do it, I did it, and I just love cooking. So when I have the time, which usually is Sundays, except campaign season, which it's now, I cook for the family, and it's usually anywhere between 11 to 14 of us. And obviously holidays, I'll cook for. And I'm still doing the nonprofits out there. Don't call in. I don't need any more. We got a whole list right now still. But, you know, it's hard to say no when it's a worthy cause and you can help make a difference.
That's
so
terrific.
That's the fun part of it.
That's great. Another way to give back.
It is.
Yeah.
And a fun way to do it, you know, because cooking and watching people eat, you know, if you're having a good meal, it puts a smile on your face.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people would rather spend money on a good meal and sit down and enjoy that company with their friends than go out and buy a suit or a pair of shoes or dress, right? It's easier. It's more palatable to do that. And that's the enjoyment. And to be part of that is special.
That's great. Well, thank you very much. This is a really great conversation. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
I like to
me.
Wrap up every interview with Fast Five. So
Okay.
It's like five random questions.
Go ahead.
First thing that comes to your mind. What's your favorite movie?
Oh, God. She's favorite movie. Maybe The Godfather,
okay.
I guess. And I do like a lot of Elvis movies.
Oh, okay. All right. I was actually going to, speaking of The Godfather, I was going to mention, I'd always been told that the horse's head on the seal was reference to The Godfather.
In the bed scene.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe, except it's a different color horse.
Right. That's right. So you like to cook. You get home late at night. What's your favorite thing to kind of whip up as a late night snack? What's your go-to meal?
You know, here's the thing. Late night, I don't do that anymore.
Okay.
Because, you know, I learned the hard way of gaining 50 pounds that eating, you know, late at night is not good for the waistline. So I try not to do that anymore. It's really the Sunday dinners. If I had a last meal, if that's the question, you know, for some reason I had to pick a last meal for myself, it would be veal parm.
Excellent.
You know, that would be my go-to for myself.
Right.
Other people, I'll cook anything from seafood to fish to meat to chicken to whatever. It doesn't matter.
That's great. You like to cook mostly Italian or it doesn't really?
No, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
No.
Do you have any people that you look up to in the political realm, any idols that you, when you were coming up through the ranks or now that you kind of look to as inspiration?
Yeah,
could be anybody.
Yeah. I go back to the legislators that came before me here in this district. You know, I think I would pick Kevin O'Toole locally. You know, I think Kevin has done one heck of a job representing this district in a very bipartisan way. You know, he's really touched the state as a whole, and he's doing some great things as the chairman of the Port Authority. So if I had to pick one person, you know, that's the person that I would say, you know, I would want to emulate at a state level because he's done one heck of a good job.
Okay. Good choice. Memorial Day is coming up. Do you have any plans for the summer? Once we pass the budget, obviously.
Well, first off, Memorial Day is coming up, so we have lots of parades to walk in.
Yes.
You know,
it's
a great, you know, listen, we have to, you know, pay respects to the ones who served before us in the military and currently serve, right?
Yep.
So it's our obligation to be out there and be part of that. For the summer, no. You know, spending more time with the family if I can. But again, as I said, it's campaign season.
Right.
So it's a lot of street fairs.
The
entire 80 of us are up. So, you know, we're going to be everywhere and anywhere just like we did 2 years ago and as we do today. So each night I get home late. It's just what we do. I enjoy it, and I'll continue to do that all during the summer.
So last question. If you met someone, a young person who's interested in getting into politics but maybe a little, you know, jaded by the process or may not know a lot about it, what's one thing that you would tell them?
Well, I think it's a combination. You know, it's be true to yourself, all right, and keep your word. But at the end of the day, whether you're in business or politics, when you leave, you want to leave it better than when you got there.
Right.
It's a very simple concept. Leave it better than you got there, and there's no one person more important than the group, right? It's not you. It's not about you. It's about the group. And the group in this case is the state of New Jersey and all its residents. You want to protect them, and you want to do what's in the best interest of all of them, not a specific group. You know, it's not about a minority class, you know, a higher class. It's about everybody. We all have the same desires and goals in life, and we should respect them all and treat everybody equally.
Kevin Rooney, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
See you around the State House.